heavily a praying country with majority of its population belonging to a local church. We Christians have more room to show the world our responsibility of who God is through our actions and how we treat others. So although I find that most of the Ghanaian Christian population is passive about the affairs of the institutions that govern the land, meaning that a lot of people think, oh, it's the government, I'm not in politics, it's not my business, our prayers might be hindered, because eventually we're supposed to, you know, live in a world or create a world that is way better and way advanced, that, you know, involves everybody, just like what Christ mandated us to do. So where our neighbors are, immediate family members, this episode is with loving hearts dedicated to the memory of Charlene and all she endured to her passing. So may her soul rest in peace. So Mimi, tell me a little bit about your family. Tell me about yourself growing up, who Charlene is to you, and why this conversation is important to you.
Okay, well, a little bit about myself growing up. So Charlene, as she said, was she was actually my half-sister, because we had different fathers, but we grew up like sisters, if you know what I mean. The half never ever mattered. It was never even, yeah. So growing up with Charlene, it was pretty natural for a child my age. Everything was fine, as I should put it. But I noticed over the years that our environment mattered a lot. And I grew up in a broken nuclear family. And it was me, Charlene, and then my grandmother. At the time, my mother wasn't really around because she was in the UK. She was a nurse, so she was working. And Charlene and myself were born in the UK, and we came to Ghana to live with my grandmother. Okay. And growing up, I remember feeling quite lonely. Yes, I felt lonely most of the part, because I was in school, and then my friends will have their parents and everybody else around them, their guardians. You see, their parents come and pick them up, and they're like, oh, you as your mom, as your dad, and how are they? When we're having PTA meetings, well, my auntie will have to stand in for my mother because she wasn't around. And yes, they'll ask, oh, so how's your dad doing? So more so, I'm speaking for myself in terms of how I felt as a child. I had the knowledge of rejection quite early because my father wasn't around. You call him and he's unavailable. So I felt rejected. I felt he didn't want me, because I knew he was in the UK with his other family. And every now and then I had to call for one thing or the other, and he just wasn't present. But with Charlene, I feel even though her father wasn't also physically present, he gave her more attention than I even received from my father. Yeah, so I believe Charlene's father was there for a period of time. But that's why I speak more about the environment, because this is the setting that we grew up in. Obviously, I had my cousins who had their full nuclear families with their parents in the house. You know what I mean? And we grew up with my grandmother, who literally did all she could. I mean, she was amazing. The bond between my grandmother and myself was quite strong, you know. And I don't know how Charlene handled it. But that's why I say again, speaking for myself, I felt lonely and rejected most of the time, despite the fact that I had a strong bond with my grandmother. And it's just to say that I think we have unique idiosyncrasies. So however I may react to a particular situation may not be the same for another person. In this regard, Charlene, I don't know how she reacted to this, but this is just how it was like for me growing.
I see. And I mean, one would say that, Mimi, your parents lived in London, so I'm sure they sent you a lot of stuff. Like, I'm sure you looked really good going to school. You were not shabbily dressed or anything like that. Someone would say that you feel privileged, or with all this that you have, why are you complaining? Why are you saying that you're lonely? You had everybody around you. But I sense more of a bonding, a natural bonding need of a child from the parents that had you. So What do you think about that?
It's interesting you mentioned this, Shadia, because indeed my parents were in the UK, but mind you, my mother did send a lot of things. I mean, from clothes to shoes to whatever. My father, as I mentioned earlier, wasn't there. Okay, yes. And I think mental health, it's holistic, because it talks about our emotional, psychological, and social well-being. Okay, then it also tends to affect how we feel, think, and act. So somebody will think, oh, from what I'm seeing, Mimi has it all. Her parents are not here. And indeed, I was never shabbily dressed, because my grandmother would ensure that I looked up to it. Okay, now, you know, there are some people who don't have enough, but you will never know. Okay,
right.
That was typical. Not that she really didn't. She was very okay, but she went sure. From polishing our shoes to our white socks, even we used to put pawns on our face. What shows that there was no bond between myself and my father? Nothing. When you look at me, my physical attendance or appearance, I look up to it. Like, I'm perfect, really. So it should tell you that it goes way beyond what we see. Okay, more to also do with how we act, how we perceive things, and how we actually, you know, process things. And that actually has a toll on our well-being as human beings.
Right. Yeah. And you bring up a great point, and this is to any man listening to this podcast. It's highly important that, especially, I believe I read somewhere that daughters, you know, have a special bond when it comes to their fathers as well. That's where they receive that first love of what it should be to, you know, recognize love in your life from a man or someone from the opposite sex as a woman. And I believe that it's really important. So if you're a guy and you're listening, it's necessary. Before we move on, I just want to do a quick break to bring in the fact that We Sell Genesis podcast has partnered with the Shepherd's Rod Foundation. What we aim to do is bring you the virtual adoption program. In this program, if you're a single or a couple without a baby yet, or if you just have the need to, you know, try to be committed to your finances, try to know what it seems like to take care of someone. We do have some children, specifically young girls who have lost their parents due to coronavirus, or just they are like orphans right now and they need help. So this is not a call to donate your money and just go away, but we offer you an opportunity for this virtual adoption program. Get the kid, get to know the kid, talk to the kid, make sure that they're doing well, give them the support that they need while also providing for them. With as little as 100 Ghana cedis a month, you are able to take care of a child completely. So if you're interested, you can email wesellgenesis@gmail.com and we can connect you. So going back on the topic, I'm really enjoying this. So far, I've learned a lot. I wanted to ask you, Mimi, so what are some of the signs and symptoms that you realized growing up surrounding Charlene's mental health challenges? Just this is before she was diagnosed.
Okay, so before she was diagnosed. Now, the thing with mental health, it's very difficult to detect. It usually goes unnoticed because, I mean, human beings have various temperaments, okay, and somebody may act out of it just in a second, but it really doesn't mean nothing. I mean, let's say we can have an attitude when we are all upset. So that's what I'm saying, it goes unnoticed over a period of time. But then if you look closely, especially you can do this if you're living with a person, you realize one or two things that you're not able to understand. Perhaps let's say the overly excitement about something that is not too fascinating or endearing, and also the snap and the bouts of anger that may just flash in and out from time to time, you know what I mean? Yeah. And yes, it's difficult because, as I said, no one is perfect. You can't tell that, oh, this is it. But that's what I'm saying, that it's the repetition of these things that will make you suspect. okay, that yes, maybe there might be something wrong. And you're not even sure, because I mean, we can all act crazy if we're being honest here. So yeah. So that's
you bring up a very important point when you talk about realizing things. I think that our generation is so caught up in, you know, our phones and work and trying to excel and trying to succeed. And at the same time, we're still trying to build our values and what we believe in. A good example is yourself, you know, becoming a mother, becoming a wife. All these things are a lot of things to handle at the same time. And unfortunately, mental health, like I've had conversations with you, Sidebar, it's not like a fever that you would wake up and you would see your daughter with a high fever or runny nose, then you know, oh, I need to take you to the hospital. So it's really important that as much as we are caught up with our lives and doing all sorts of things, it's important to be detail oriented about knowing our child. And this is a beautiful thing, but also this brings me to my next question, which was even, it just came up right now in my head. Ghana is a place where a lot of nannies and caregivers are giving the responsibility of a child. Literally, parents would tell you, grandparents would tell you, hey, have a child. I can take care of the child. You can go on with your life. What do you think about this notion?
Okay, so Shadia, this is very funny because I remember when I had my son, I had so many people say, oh, go to your mom. Go to your mom. She'll help you. Now, I was looking at so many things. It wasn't just about going to my mom or any of my aunties or anything. We realized that the strength we have as a youth or as a woman growing up, it's not the same, especially when we hit a certain age, okay? Now, my mother will not be as strong as she was. And taking care of a child, especially a newborn, it can be daunting, you know? Because sometimes you have to walk about, cajole the baby. See, their back, their knees, let's just be real here, they are not as active. Now, it brings me back to the other alternative, which is to get a nanny or help. These nannies, from what I have seen with my eyes, do not have any experience whatsoever. In fact, anybody calls themselves a nanny just because perhaps they have taken care of a child before. That is what it is in Ghana.
Or they want to take care of it.
Exactly. So no, they've taken care of a child, so they tell you without saying that they have some experience, if you know what I mean. Exactly. And see, even the way they would charge you, you think, hey, they must be professionals to even charge. They are not. They don't have any certificate, absolutely nothing. And when they come with an attitude, okay? Like, they know what they are doing. This is my job. So you realize that even at times, they are telling you what to do. And it can get pretty annoying. You know what I mean? Yeah, so, I mean, when it comes to, well, in Africa, nannies, we really need to be careful of who we allow to take care of our children, you know, because there's really no safe place. I mean, the best option would have been perhaps to take our babies to our mothers, but there's only a limit to which they can also help.
Right.
You know what? Our mothers also have their life, okay? And they also have things that they are also getting around to. Deep down, they love to help. They would love to help, but there's always a limit. They will try their best. Even when they are suffering, they don't want you to know. But because you also care so much about their well-being, you really don't want to overwhelm them with something that they may not even be able to handle, you know, through and through. You get it? Yeah.
Yeah, you bring up another good point. You know, self-love doesn't mean like giving yourself so much. Well, it's like an oxymoron. I don't know how to explain it, but I also have been doing a lot of reading and researching, and I know that motherhood, and I know a lot of people might kill me when I say this, but motherhood has been said to be over glorified in the sense that, you know, people think that when you, oh my gosh, Mimi, you are working 9 to 5, you're carrying your baby, you're doing this, wow, and you still have time to go get your sister's child, and you do this and you do that and you do that. And it's like a mandate that has been set on women. It has become like a mandate to set on a woman that, you know, hard is good. But that's actually in itself problematic, because like you said, your mom has her own life, and if she is going through her own things, or maybe being retired, you know, she has hobbies or influencing other people's lives, caring, like needed care for a child, it shouldn't be like a, how do I put this? It should be something coming from, you know, I just want to do this to support you, not like it's your responsibility.
Exactly.
To do it. So I like what you said. And I also want to bring up the fact that I've been really tapping into a lot of resources from America. They have the NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Health. They offer a community group, which is sessions where, you know, there's a peer-to-peer setup. It's either people like yourself, Mimi, who has cared for a loved one who has gone through mental illness or mental health challenges. And, you know, they sit together with people who are going through it, or they themselves have mental health issues. And this supports them and pushes them to find help. Because then you notice that in Ghana, maybe sometimes when we are feeling like, oh, I'm really struggling, I'm really suffering, sometimes you feel alone or lonely. But being in a peer supportive environment allows you to open your eyes to see that, no, this person that you're seeing, like you said, looks good, goes to school and everything, they have issues too. So it brings down that non-judgmental space. They also have like a hotline for crisis. How do we do this? Like, how do we educate the population to have that transformation of mindset? Because I think that people are taking this religious thing too far, where I don't see the action. Like, I don't know how being in a Sunday school and taking care of children, I like, besides the moral impact, like, what is the actionable impact, or what do you think can be done to, you know, promote stuff like this, because it's important.
Okay, so I think we really have to work on ourselves as individuals, okay, and that will help. It would do a great deal in educating our own selves. First of all, we need to know exactly what it is, what it entails, how it digresses or progresses, if you want. And that is the only way we can speak out, okay? Because in a country like Ghana, Shadia, it's really hard, I'm telling you, because we need to read and read wide. Once I'm educated about it, I can also educate another. If I don't know anything about this, how do I even talk to somebody about it?
Exactly.
Mental health is very serious. The problem we are facing now is, as you said, these local churches, okay, they look at it from a spiritual perspective. I, for one, I'm not a very superstitious person. I'm not superstitious. And I realized over the years that dwelling in superstitious waters are murky. So I don't go there, because I do not understand it. I rather would use logic and reasoning that perhaps if Mimi has a mental breakdown, there are obviously social factors that might have contributed to it, and even environmental purposes as well, okay, as compared to a witch in my father's village who has cursed him, okay. Right, so I'd rather use my logical reasoning to try and analyze it and then seek some meaning to it. It's daunting a task. It is difficult to say it. So you realize that you exude so much energy in prayers, okay, and the situation doesn't seem to change. Sometimes the more you pray, that's the more it gets worse. You understand what I'm saying? Now, it's difficult living with someone with this symptom of not being sure of their emotional, psychological irony, because it is difficult for them to even find work to do. They go to the workplace and, in quotes, they misbehave.
Yes.
And then they are laid off. Now, if you are taking care of them, now the burden comes back to you. Okay, what does the church do, Shadia? They pray. Okay, they will pray for you. That's the best they can offer. They will pray for you and tell you what Jesus Christ says and everything. Okay, but I don't think that is what we need in the particular situation. I'm not saying prayer isn't good. Prayer is definitely the fundamental, okay, for us all. But then I'm saying that let us treat certain situations the way it ought to be treated. So if you have a brother or sister, or even a friend, perhaps a neighbor, who knows somebody, at one of these psychiatric hospitals or a counselor or a therapist. Perhaps they can even pay and say, oh, then let your sister, because it takes a toll on your finances. Okay, so instead of just limiting everything to superstition and then therefore going to a church, to the people helping you to pray, I'm sure they can all make some contribution. So then now we find that it now gets practical. Indeed.
Definitely.
Yes, now it gets practical. And now, okay, then now we are doing this. Oh, why is she all taking her here? As compared to taking her to a class psych where they'll be chained. Because then, now it brings me back to this whole governmental institutionalized. Because you realize that the government isn't really providing the amenities we need.
Less than 2% of the budget goes towards mental health, and that's even shared with
less health. Than
yeah.
Now that is a staggering figure, Shady. I mean, look at this. So you go to Accra Psych, and even the when you enter, you are not happy with what you see. It doesn't look like home. It's not comforting. It's not welcoming. Okay, it looks like a prison. It looks like a rejected space. And to think that you're taking a family member or a loved one there,
who needs heightened care.
Thank you. And will be chained. And will just be given all manner of medications. You see, it's frightening. Indeed it is.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. And before I go towards my other point I was going to ask, do you think that the role of movies... Because I remember being young... You know, there were all these movies. I don't know if you've watched like Exorcist or Exorcism. There were these Catholic-based movies where they would, you know, cast the spirits out of someone because this other person is possessed. Mm-hmm. And actually, the mental health facilities that they used to show also looked very cold. And, you know, until date, I don't know what's like. I haven't been to an actual mental health place, both here or in the US, that looks like. I don't know what it looks like, what it's supposed to look like. But do you think that has an impact on how superstition has also like been built in our culture?
Yes, I think so. Not just now. It's even in our minds. It lives there, dwells there, literally. Because watching people getting exorcised is something I have never seen with my eyes. Never been in my view. I have read, on the other hand, about issues concerning exorcism, and what I can say about it is, as I said earlier, I do not believe in superstition. I refuse to even acknowledge it when it comes to things like this. And I feel like it's all about the facilities. I mean, Shadia, if you're coming to my house, I try as much as possible to clean it up and make it homey for you, so at least when you come in, you're comfortable. Okay, that's why I say that it usually grows from our minds. What are they thinking that the place is even looking that way? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
Yes. I mean, why do you have to make it?
Is what we bring.
Yes, like a dungeon. Yeah. Why do you have to make it so scary? You know, and it's not welcoming. And if somebody is suffering from, let's say, disease of the mind, and is not sure of his or her surroundings, and the person walks in, it's going to worsen it. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. And it doesn't help. I know outside. The UK, for one, I know has special rehabilitation centers, okay, yes, where they keep people suffering or battling with mental health issues there. Rehabs, yes. So, and it looks quite engaging, if you ask me. It looks encouraging to even take a friend or a family member there. Okay, you have good... service, and you can see that you're dealing with skilled personnels who sit you down and even educate you on how to treat them should you take them home eventually. And I think is very necessary.
That's really good. That's really, really good. Another point that came up when I was doing my research was, interestingly, I learned that, you know, growing up, when kids become adolescents, that's the stage where, you know, their mind transitions from, you know, make-believe worlds and stuff. They actually start to realize reality. And one of the points that it said, which I can relate to Ghana, was that it says when an adolescent is growing, one of the changes that they have is questioning authority. That comes from that stems from their cognitive growth and development. Because like when they ask questions, they get answers, you know, they think about it like, is this true? Is this false? Which of course in the Bible, I know that when Christ was growing up, he was really amongst older people. And it tells us that, you know, he was asking questions and everybody thought, you know, hey, who is this guy? You know, is he not the carpenter's son? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So why is it that in our culture, or what do you think, when children are limited or told to shut up, or if there's something wrong and they're asking like, okay, mommy, why is it that you're treating daddy this way? Or like, it's like, don't talk about this. Do you think that that is a good point?
My take on it is, I think it stems from our ancestors, who obviously I've never met before. I don't know how they were living, but to them, the adult knows a lot and the child knows absolutely nothing. And if you're a child and you're outspoken or eloquent too much, you do not respect, you do not have proper home training, or perhaps the tone in which you're asking is not very pleasant or favorable, or also you're asking too many questions, so therefore you are forward. We have been trained to shut up, literally, not to speak. That is why a lot of people are not confident enough, okay? Because then, they are not sure. Because sometimes it's a tradition, it's culture. That is what it basically stems from. So you're a child, you don't know anything about it. Like, say, somebody dies. Oh, the person died before the age of 35. So we ought to wear black and white. Then you ask, why? They'll tell you when you die before 35, you have to. But why? That is how it is done. That is the culture. You millennial children, you think you know, but you don't. So it's a question. Why? You will not get an answer. You get it. So that is how we are trained. That obey before come. Even the complaint cry, there's a limitation to the complaint. Yes, you can't complain too much. Either your parents should teach you how to keep quiet or not talk too much in public. Right. Or don't ask too many questions. You understand what I mean? Yeah. And that's our setting, unfortunately.
It's rather sad because when these things are kept like a tight container, at some point it will explode. And that's how we have like a lot of adults like lashing out or struggling from certain things. And sometimes you want to ask that, why is this adult behaving like a child? And in fact, like when you go deeply and you're reading, and I know you've done a lot of research yourself, you tend to realize that how all that suppression now comes out, even in a relationship. You wonder why maybe a guy beats a girl so much in a relationship. Or why a girl is so violent. And I think you've made a very good point about education. It's important that we have an educated citizen, or wherever we find ourselves in Ghana, a lot more awareness should be brought to people's attention. People should learn about these things and not only think that it's superstition. Maybe when even a child is born with autism, these are things that are very important to talk about. And I've really enjoyed my conversation with you. But one thing we didn't touch about is loving yourself, because I did say loving your neighbor. So all these things that we've talked about, of course, it is my wish and goal to dedicate this episode to finding people willing to, you know, come together as a think tank, bring up a plan, maybe train teachers, go around, train churches, like give that first aid awareness so people know that this is not a monster and that this is something that's actually really going on. And in our generation, I feel like if we don't rise up to do things well, we might have a lot of issues with our kids, because there's a huge battle between what's out there that they can learn on their own versus what parents tell us. And from your story, it's important that parents are very involved in their child's lives. So coming back to loving yourself, what are some of the things that you've done over the years, especially after losing your sister? I don't know how traumatic that may be in your life. That's someone you were really close to. You said you were with your grandmother and, you know, you used to see her all the time. And then all of a sudden, she's not there. And before she died, you had to go through so much taking care of her. How are you, what things are you putting in place to develop your own mental health?
Okay, so after I lost my sister, I think I went through temporary insanity, as I wish to call it, because nothing made sense anymore. I didn't see how it was even possible. And it was a double trauma for me because I'd lost my grandmother and my sister passed just the week after we buried my grandmother. Okay. So you can imagine, I was like, what is really going on? Now, I felt the loneliest ever. And I just had to take, I think, about 2 or 3 months to myself. So this period, I really shut down. I didn't, you know, answer calls. Well, only to, I mean, specific
and actually,
people.
This is true, and I can testify because I know there was a time when we were trying to, like, you know how we have the old students and everybody's like, where's me, my son?
Right.
And yes. I can testify. So it's really humbling to know that this is what was going on.
Yes, and I just had to find myself all over again, and I needed my mojo back. I needed my confidence. I needed to focus on what I really wanted, and I needed to tell myself to put the past away. And in Ghana, therapy is not very common. When you go like, oh, I need to see a therapist, they think something happened to you, the psychosis, or you know what I mean.
So they're quick to judge.
Yes, exactly. And because they don't appreciate it, they don't read why, they don't even understand emotions, you know, the psychological effects it may have on you. But yes, and it's scary. So I, as I said, I shut down, and I was listening to TD Jakes. TD Jakes was my bread and butter, to be honest, really. And every day I felt the message was mine. It sank in properly, and there was always something new to look forward to. And I gradually built myself back, and that is what I did. I envisioned my future, and I lived it. I lived it, and that was it. I just decided to focus on a different goal that I wanted, despite everything else that happened. And that was exactly it. That was my focus. So whatever I did, it was geared towards that. Yeah.
And it's beautiful how you put it. Healing is really important. Even Christ himself, when he left, of course, he said that, you know, don't be sad because there's better things coming. And it's really hard to frame your mind that, okay, what are you talking about? This is my sister, I've lost them. But I like that you're saying that you put everything that's in the past where it belongs, and you found your strength and stood on and catapulted you. You know, like, life goes on. You're now beautifully married with your children. I mean, look at all the things that could have hindered. And this is a message to anyone listening who's stuck in the past. All these things probably would not happen in your life if you didn't move on, if you didn't push yourself, if you didn't have faith that better days were going to come. And it's very, very nice and beautifully well put. How about your mother? How did she handle all this? Because I can only imagine how hard it was for her, like, being away and not really being with all of you and then losing a daughter. That's really huge.
Yeah. Wow, it was difficult for my mother. Then I realized that God really gives us strength when we need it the most. With my mother, I say God handled her. I could not look her in the face because I couldn't even imagine what she was going through. And even now, she's extremely overprotective over me. And sometimes I think, okay, I understand her. She's lost a child before. I'm literally her everything. Because she just had two of us. Yeah. My sister and then myself. And when you just see things happen like that, it's like... Do you understand what I mean?
It's wonderful.
You can't understand. You cannot fathom that.
It's beyond your imagination.
That your daughter, you have actually lost a daughter. And at that age, where, let's say, some of our mothers have BP and hypertension and all, you can just imagine. Yes. You can imagine what she would go through. But that's why I said God kept her. I will not take credit for what I didn't. I didn't do anything. All I was telling her was, God knows why he gave you two children. So just count your blessing.
Right. Okay. Count your blessing.
Yes. Counted.
Very important. Count your blessing. Church, school, wherever, whoever leaders, count your blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as you have all these people that we're losing, we also have the people that are living. So mm-hmm. it's important that we are able to manage our emotions, manage the way we move on, manage, and also think about the way our behavior can affect other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would also be protecting our mental health. It's been a wonderful conversation. I definitely would love to have you here again, possibly on a panel with other people. And I really appreciate you, Mimi.
Okay.
I just want to maybe end with a word of prayer from you for anyone that's going through this. Might be someone that we don't know who might hear this and might say, wow, this has inspired me to, you know, move on with my life or get help. Could you please say a prayer to end this podcast on
everything? Sure. Okay. This prayer is actually dedicated to whoever is going through something, be it mental health or depression, whatever it is that you can't come out and you're not seeking to find solution or healing ground. I pray that the Holy Spirit ministers to you today. May He touch your heart. May you be directed by the word of the Almighty. May He comfort you and protect you. Whatever it is, note that the situation will not last. You will move on to something new and greater, because that's what God does. He gives all of us a second chance. Try as much as possible to leave the past behind. What you cannot change, give it to God. He is always in control. And I pray that today's message will minister to you, whoever, and motivate you and propel you to greater heights. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Mimi. I wish you a wonderful day. Thank you, audience. See you, and you'll hear from me next week with another wonderful episode of The Mental Health and the Messiah. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.